It's about time we return to the moon. This is Western Worlds. Greetings, and welcome to another episode of Western Worlds. I'm John Kissy, speaking to you from the Centre for Planetary Science and Exploration at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. The colonisation of other planets is a subject never far from the minds of those concerned with space exploration. As time moves on and newer technology is developed, lunar colonization becomes a more and more viable possibility. And seeing this, space organizations from all over the world are contributing to the ESA Moon Village concept. This week, we return to Bernard Fuong to discuss his role as Executive Director of the International Lunar and Exploration Working Group and the research areas being explored by him and his research assistants. Let's go to that interview. Okay, well, I'm here at ESTEC with Bernard Fuong and Helene Foss. We're here, we're going to talk a little bit about the ESA Moon Village concept and how that's progressed since last we talked to Bernard a year ago. So maybe we could just get started with Bernard. First off, can you recap for the listeners, what exactly is the concept behind the ESA Moon Village and where are you hoping that it will go?
Yeah, so the Moon Village is a concept with a vision of a sustainable human presence and activities on the surface of the Moon. So we target to do that with some robotic and human means by 2030. But de facto, we already have started on the Moon Village, a concept of international collaboration with a broad range of stakeholders, multiple users, multiple use of the Moon platform. And we have started already 10 years ago. We had in Europe a probe around the Moon, Smart One, just touched down actually exactly 10 years ago after demonstrating some new technologies for future exploration. And after Smart One, we had a fleet of lunar orbiters from various countries, China, from India, from Japan, from US, where we really worked in the spirit of the village of scientists, engineers working together to share data, also free European instruments on board the Indian mission, Chandrayaan-1, so we started to exchange not only data, but we exchange payload, we exchange experience, and so we have been working on the next step, robotic village. And we have started with a lander that the Chinese put in December 2013, called Chang'e 3, with a lander and a small rover, U-2, that were operating, and the lander is still in operation. In the next years, we will have also a number of lunar landers, commercial or governmental, some from Google Lunar X Prize competition, but we'll have also some of them being prepared, like from China again, Chang'e 4, Chang'e 5, from Japan, from Korea, and also a collaboration between Russia and Europe, where by 2020 we plan to have a polar lander that will look for the ice that we have discovered there, that will characterize its distribution, and also how we could exploit it in the future.
So maybe you could tell us about some of the progress that's been made in the last year. What exactly have you been doing in order to progress the idea?
So at the level of agency, we organize a number of workshops where we try to engage all the colleagues, engineers, scientists, but also others working at the agency. And in particular, also the young ESA professionals. And Helene is one of them working with us on some of this project to brainstorm of how we would see what we would do on the Moon Village. So we looked at, for instance, how we would want to design the habitat where the astronaut would live. We look also at what precursor landers and instruments and what research science and technology could be done before we send humans. And we have also other groups that look at how we could engage the public, also how we could inspire the youngster, how we could inspire stakeholders and people with money to help support the project, so that it's not only a program, it's also a concept where we want to invite other people with elements to contribute to the Moon Village. And we look also to have funding coming from these partners. So we organize some of these workshops. And as well, we try to organize demo activities where, for instance, some of our scientists, engineers, can show some experiments that we are running, like the one that Hélène is running now, making the analysis of Moon-Mars analog samples with spectrometers.
Okay. So, Hélène, maybe that's a good time to bring you in. Maybe you can tell us, first of all, a little bit about your background, your educational-wise, and then maybe tell us a little bit about the idea behind your experiment that you're working on now.
Okay. Well, I'm a geologist. I studied earth sciences at the Vrije Universiteit in Amsterdam. And, well, geology is mainly about the earth. It's earth sciences. But a small part of it is also planetary sciences. And during courses on this subject, I met Bernard. And I became really interested in planetary sciences, in the geology of, well, the moon, the Mars. And I think it's an interesting new scientific field. And that's why I started my traineeship here. And what I'm doing right now is I'm looking at a way to analyze rocks when you're on the moon or when you're on Mars or any planet. And I do this using spectroscopy. Now, right now I'm looking at rocks that are similar to the rocks we would expect on the moon and the characteristics they have when you analyze them with a spectrometer. And by doing so, I hope to make a calibration using the spectrometer so we can use this when we go to the moon. And I want to help people using this spectrometer to make their own analysis, because that's eventually the goal. A geologist will maybe not go to the moon, so that people who are not used working with spectrometers can also do the analysis. And this is important because, first of all, it's scientifically very interesting to know when you're on the moon, what kind of rocks do we see. But it's also good if you want to look at your habitat, want to use certain rocks for maybe building this. So in that way, I hope I can contribute to the moon village.
That actually sounds like a really interesting line of research that you're following. So am I right in thinking that what you're trying to do is automate the analysis process of the geology so that astronauts who maybe are not geologists would be able to conduct that kind of analysis with pretty regular certainty?
Yes, that's one of the things I hope I can do. Of course, it's still a lot of research needs to be done and only my subject will not be enough. But yes, that's definitely a goal.
We are also testing some nice human-robotic partnerships. We are not all able to go to the moon in the short term. Actually, in the Moon Village vision, maybe we'll have only 10 people which will be permanently there in 2030. My hope is that in 2040 we'll have 100, we'll have 1,000 in 2050, maybe we'll have 10,000 in 2060. But before we are there, we can deploy some robotic system. So this way you can engage hundreds of people from Earth in the science. And the astronaut is more enabling, can bring the samples, he can check, use the instrument also. But we are also testing a mode where the astronaut go collect the samples, place them on a lander, and then Hélène can take over, and at a distance from Earth, she can analyze the sample and can tell the astronaut, yes, that's a good one, or look for another type of sample. So this way we can engage much more workforce remotely from Earth. And that's also the type of simulation that we are conducting in collaboration with another group. It's called Moon-Mars Poland. Mm-hmm. They are building a Moon-Mars simulation base. And we are going to train astronauts, but also remote engineers, remote scientists, to perform like we would have a real mission, where you will have a strong synergy in defining investigation, also helping remotely the astronauts for all their activities. So we are going to test that in analog simulation, where we look at landscapes similar to the Moon or Mars. Also, we are collaborating with the European Astronaut Center. They want also to develop a good expertise in how you can use tele-robotic in support to astronauts.
Okay. So I have a question primarily for Hélène. What is it about your methodology that makes it useful for non-geologists to use?
Well, first of all, there's a big difference in how we analyze rocks on Earth. We have big machines, and when you go to the moon, you cannot bring a big machine. It's too heavy. You need to have something very small. But also, you don't have to prepare a rock. Sometimes you have to maybe cut a rock or dissolve it in certain acids. And using this spectroscopy, you can really place a rock in front of the spectrometer, and it will measure it and give a spectra. So you don't have to do anything to prepare a sample for measurements.
What are we looking at here? Is it some kind of a laser? How is this working? Like, because this is exciting, right? You know, because, you know, I'm a big space geek. So what you're basically talking about here is a tricorder. So I'm very excited about this. So I really want to try and convey that to the listeners here.
You're right. It's a light, but it's actually a light from maybe the sun, just an external light. And this light has a spectra, so light consists of certain wavelengths. If you have a rock, then certain wavelengths can be absorbed. So light touches the rock reflects a certain wavelength, the spectrometer measures this spectra, and by the absorption bands, the wavelengths which were absorbed, you can say which minerals or elements could be present in the sample. So maybe it's iron or water, or it can also be biomarkers like plants or bacteria.
How does this compare to a methodology like an APSX machine or an X-ray fluorescence spectrometer? Because obviously these kinds of machines, there's a radiation hazard. Now what you're talking about is using a method which just uses incidental light. Is that as reliable as these other methods?
Not yet. I have to say right now, I'm only working in the visible spectrum, so from like 400 nanometers to 700. But if you would also go and use the infrareds, then you have much more information. But it's still not as reliable as XRF. But of course, that's what we're working on.
Yeah, that's reasonable. So are you able to detect only elements, or can you detect different kind of compounds like ores and so on and so forth?
Well, I think that's actually one of the problems, that elements like iron have certain characteristics, but when they're present in a mineral, their characteristic will change.
Yeah.
The problem is that it can change in many different ways that it's difficult to make a reliable method.
Okay, then. Right now you're expecting some results. Maybe you could tell us what those results are. What are you expecting right now?
Well, one of the experiments I'm working on is actually not really rock-related, but together with a biologist, Agata, we're growing plants on different kinds of soils, also volcanic regolith, which should represent the soil on the moon. And I want to look at how the spectra of the plant change with the soil, so the different soils, how it can influence the spectra of the plant, but also how we can analyze the health of this plant.
Excellent. So Bernard, come back to you. Maybe you can give us an overview about how this idea is going to fit into the whole moon village. What do you see this idea being used for?
This is an example of a research and development project which would allow to do good science. For instance, with such a spectrometer, which is in fact like an eye, which would be able to see 400 colors. Okay. And with this, you can really see fingerprints of minerals partly, of water, but also fingerprints of life. And we could apply that even in very early missions with a rover that can be equipped with such a spectrometer. But also this type of diagnostic could be used in the next experiment where we could bring the first flower on the surface of the moon. In addition to making beautiful image of this flower growing in front of the Earth, and I would like to produce this iconic image in the next few years. Also, you would have the tool to diagnose how the flower as an ecosystem is evolved. And you could monitor the health or the parasite or other species that are hosted by the flowers. Now, we have made experiments like this one, where we use a lunar soil analog to grow different plants. And this type of fundamental research can help us also later to develop greenhouses, life support system that will use some of these selected species that can survive or can flourish on the surface of the moon. So that's one example of research we can conduct there. You have also other techniques where we could make science from the moon, making use of the moon to deploy telescope to observe the universe or to search for extraterrestrial intelligence. That's one of the area where we think why we would want to have the moon village to perform research. It will be a great testbed to test technology, develop technology that will be useful for planetary exploration or even for Earth. It's also will be a place where we will learn to live off the land.
Mm.
Also, we believe another dimension, it's a global, peaceful cooperation project between the most brilliant minds on Earth. So that's some of the main dimension of the Moon platform. And I propose that we let our surprise guest enter. This is Agatha coming here and bringing some of the plants we were talking about.
Yes.
And we were discussing about the project of growing plants, making use of lunar soil analogs. We are joined now by Agatha Kolodziejczyk.
Mm-hmm.
And also she has a very interesting project where she is building on Earth in Poland a Moon-Mars simulation base where we can train our scientists, engineers, and astronauts in the preparation for future trip to the Moon Village and to the Mars Journey.
Okay, maybe we could quickly just go into how your work is contributing to the Moon Village project and what your part in this all is.
So I have two main projects. One is here within Advanced Concepts team in ESA, where I am developing alternative bioreactors. And this is basically about building multi-species bioreactors.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to mount biology in a broader way to closed life-sustaining systems. And habitat on the Moon will be such closed life-sustaining system. And then additional project Bernard has already mentioned before is to build the laboratories, special Moon-Mars habitat in Poland. This is project of scientists, engineers. It's not ESA project, but many people from ESA are helping to make it as good as possible. So this is a private initiative. And we are going, yes, to simulate Moon conditions, Mars conditions there.
Okay, that's awesome. Could you tell us a little bit about your background? What education did you have? How did you get to this particular point? How did you find out about the project?
Yes, so my scientific background is neuroscience. I made my PhD in Stockholm University. What I'm very proud of, I had luck to discover an internal eyelid of insects, what can be as well somehow used for applications of large telescopes in space, because they need very heavy, you know, shields to prevent solar light to enter the very sensitive sensors. So I discovered the hardware, how to decrease the sensitivity of photoreceptors.
Okay.
This is my doctoral thesis, and then I moved to several postdoctoral positions, and then I moved to space. Because my parents are astronomers and they are building private observatory. So always I was, you know, like biology was one, my love, and then astronomy was my duty.
Another. That's excellent. So maybe all of you can contribute to this. One of the things I really enjoy about working at ESA and having had my experience here was the way that all these different nationalities are working together and coming together. And the thing I like about this Moon Village idea is it seems like people from every part of the world are coming together to build this village on the Moon. So how's that working at the moment? How's the interaction with people from different nationalities? And
we have a big family of lunar explorers all over the world. And so very naturally, all these collaborators of 20 years, they have joined the Moon Village concept. And we are very open in terms of countries. But also we want to be open in terms of generations, all different professional disciplines. So not only the scientists, technical, engineering, but also artists should be involved, innovators, finance, and billionaires are welcome if you want to support our project. But really we want and we have to want to have multiple users from all countries, all disciplines, but also multiple use.
I really think it's amazing to meet such a diverse group of people. It's not just one country. Everyone is from somewhere else and everyone has their own story, their own background. And I think that's really inspiring.
And how do you feel about Agatha?
I feel I'm in space already here. Really, and the planet Earth is so small.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really what I realized as well when I was here. Well, I think that's a good place to finish the interview. So thank you all three of you for taking part. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, join us on the Moon Village.
Yes, absolutely. I'll be keeping an eye out on progress, and we'll definitely have to check back regularly and get updates from all of you.
And now for the roundtable discussion.
So, the return of Bernard Fuong. What did you guys think about that interview?
It's pretty interesting to hear about his ideas for a moon village. It's something that, growing up, it was like a childhood fantasy. Living on the moon and just having this village on the moon has always seemed like something that would be so cool, and I never knew why we weren't doing that when I was growing up.
Yeah, we are not from the generation where they went to the moon, so I don't know why they want to go to Mars. Why would you want to go all the way there? And this is right here, you know? It's only 3 days away.
It's only 3 days.
That one is 6 to 8 months away.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know? I think it's a great testing ground for a lot of technologies and a lot of things that they want to do on Mars.
Yeah, exactly.
They could always have like a setup, startup base on the moon. And if it works out fine, then they can do it on Mars. So I love the idea of Moon Village. I think that's the way to go. People love Mars and people want to go to Mars because it's Earth-like. But there's so many things that once we are done here on Earth, like the analog missions that we do, we have tested the technology, we should test it out somewhere else other than Earth, and I think Moon is the place to go.
Yep.
It's the obvious choice, and it's right there.
I mean, I agree. I totally love the idea of going to Mars and being part of that, of course, but like you said, the Moon, so it's like there. So we should really check that out first, and like you, I grew up watching space shuttle launches, and unlike most people, I never got bored of that. I always wondered what was going on, like why were we not on the moon? And when I watched the old documentaries about the moon landings and the space race and Sputnik and all this kind of stuff, and then realizing that that was going on, well, I suppose the shuttle was the tail end of that, really, but you know, the main thrust of that was all going on right up until, say, the end of the 70s, and then there was nothing. We seem to have just been satisfied with just throwing things into orbit and using it to watch cartoons and stuff. So, you know, all joking aside, I would certainly be very excited that this concept has got as much interest from inside the industry as it has is actually kind of very exciting to me. And also, I found the projects they were working on very exciting. And what do you guys think about the projects the two interns were working on?
I think there's like baby steps in everything. So we are currently testing out with the analog missions here, you know, how the technology would work or how people, if you confine them into like a tin can for 6 months. But I think the next step is going to be actually testing things out one by one. So I love the idea of growing plants in the moon regolith and then seeing how that would be different to components in the soil that you would find on Mars. And I don't know why people haven't been doing it. Like the last time we were there was, what, 1972? Last Apollo mission.
Yeah, like a moon base, it would give something to the general public to be interested in. They're not going to be interested in satellites just orbiting planets as much as something tangible on another world. It would bring back the excitement of like a space race or shuttles.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think the industry needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or even just like, I don't know, moon hotel, a space tourism industry.
Yeah.
So I think public would be interested because they look at the moon at night in the sky and you can be like, look, can you see the dome right there? You know, for kids, that's kind of the thing that gives them idea. And the fact that even the interns, their backgrounds are so varied, and that kind of brings in another skill and expertise. It's like you don't have to be a lunar researcher. Your background could be varied, or as have like neuroscience,
exactly,
or earth science,
or biology, horticulture.
This is the thing I like about space. You need a lot of people from different areas.
Yep.
There's a lot of interest that could be gained from having people with different skills kind of bringing them in when they actually see things happening. You can get people into this area by just exciting them about the moon village. And then you would have a lot of people with different variety of expertise then work on the Mars missions. I think it's great that they have interns from such different variety. And then they're working on projects that, you know, you wouldn't think about.
I think that was a very interesting interview, considering it wasn't just, you know, one person. It was more of a group thing. We got to talk at once to kind of somebody who has the large scale vision and then see how these small things are working up to that. That's also another aspect of this that perhaps a lot of people don't really get. You know, it's you know, when you see your space launch or your particular mission, it comes across as one thing, but it's actually made up of many small moving parts that need to be managed. And that's really difficult, especially, you know, when you're going somewhere that has no air or soil or water. Those things can be kind of hard. So it's always interesting to see how this thing sit together. I certainly really enjoyed speaking to Bernard again and his two colleagues.
That's our show for this week. Western Worlds is a production of the Center for Planetary Science and Exploration. This episode was produced by John Kissy and Parshdi Patel and featured an interview by co-host John Kissy. Our roundtable discussion featured John Kissy, Parshdi Patel and Dana Beaton. And our editors were John Kissy and Dana Beaton. And I am John Kissy. Our theme music is Heliosheath by Sean Kim. You can continue the conversation online, listen to past episodes and learn more about Western Worlds by going to our website at cpsx.uwo.ca/westernworlds. We are available on Twitter and Facebook, Internet Archive and SoundCloud. On behalf of everybody here at Western Worlds, I would like to thank you for joining us. We hope that you will join us again next time, right here on Western Worlds.